This is session 171, recorded on October 7th, copyright 2009, New Grand View Incorporated, all rights reserved, and we're starting at 7:26 p.m. Hawaii time. Greetings, Ion.
Good morning.
Now, is there anything that you want to discuss immediately?
We're just perfectly happy, deliciously content. What would you like to ask tonight?
Okay, just a second.
Are you asking us to engage in the false premise of time? It's not an apology. We're asking a question, and it's okay.
Yeah, just a second.
It could be the TikTok version of the lining up the metronome to start off the timing of how the flow is going to go. And if that's the case, that's perfectly all right.
Okay. I'll get out my notes.
Oh, it's so noted.
And I have... There were two movies someone brought up.
Good.
Two TV shows. One called Sliders, and the other called The 4400.
Yes.
And I don't know anything about them, but the person said they might have something to do with themes that are in Lost, Flash Forward, and the kind of stuff we're...
No. Which one do you want to start with?
Well, let's do The 4400.
Okay. 4400 were people who came. They just showed up.
Oh, yeah.
They were these people that just showed up. They didn't know where they were from. They didn't know who they were. They did some historical references on them. And the little girl that was supposedly the star of the show, turns out her record was that she was 94 years old. And she was there. She was a little girl. And they all came out of this lake or bay or area or whatever. And then all these other people were coming up. They were just walking out of the water.
So
they didn't have any clothes on, and they were buck naked, and they had to put them in a concentration camp and keep them separate and test them to see what it was. They didn't have cognitive memory from where they were. They just were.
Okay, I got that premise. I remember the person telling me, would this be an approximation or metaphor for a phenomenon that actually happens in inter-world communication?
It certainly has taken place. But it's never been done on the scale. Well, let me say it a different way. Yes, it has happened to that level and degree, but never done to that degree where it would be so
obvious. So
obvious. Yes, it wouldn't make MGM's top 10 kind of thing.
Right, and so you have. Would these be riff writers who slipped over?
There's no slippage.
You're in a weird echo.
There's no slippage.
Right.
You don't slip.
These are people who intended to come over.
Yes.
And they were noticed, and they couldn't. Did they have amnesia like the ones in the show?
Yes.
Right,
some had memory, some didn't. And the only reason they didn't have memory is because they had rules regarding it.
Yeah.
You can't do that. So if you can't do that and you do it, then you better not remember it. Or they'll call you crazy.
That reminds me.
If you start remembering things that can't be, that messes up the rules and regulations, you see.
Which brings to a point, there are lots of people who riff ride. They're not necessarily.
There are lots of people who riff ride.
Right, and do it consciously, not the ones slipping back and forth and aren't aware of it. They do it consciously.
We don't like the slipping thing. You act like if you take a wrong step, you fall through the portal, and then you're lost eternally, not remembering where you came from or where you're going or who you are or who you're going to be. And it's just not that way. You choose, just like in a childhood experience, you have an experience that then you choose to negate from your memory.
Right.
Or you have people talk about it. Here's a good example. There'll be a terrible accident. okay? And they'll be in this horrible, painful situation. And they get done, and they can't remember any of the pain.
Right.
They don't remember it. They have no knowledge of it. As far as they know, it never happened. But yet people were standing around the bed while they were writhing in this agony and all this kind of stuff, and the people don't have any knowledge of it because they don't want to remember it. You see? They choose not to participate in that memory. And that's the same way of what you're talking about here. But it's not a sliding thing. It's
right.
Conscious. It's conscious.
Okay, I get that. So I was thinking that people have been doing this all through spans, and but no one, it is not discussed publicly, and that's why it's a something that people say, no, that can't be. You know what I mean?
Nostradamus did.
One guy. Okay.
Do you mean one guy?
One guy wrote about it.
Okay, you want to start there? Well, let's start. We'll start recording them and give you everyone that's ever written it down that experienced it. Let's go. You got to go to Plato. You got to go to Homer. You got to go to all the recorders for the House of Tudor. You have to go to the scrolls in Alexandria. And those have been the priest and the authors of the what they call the people who kept the notes,
scribes.
Scribes. Then you got to flip into the different sects of the different monks that recorded different aspects that showed up that couldn't be explained, and they explained it the best they could, and they used those right words, even from the Latin inferences. Of there must be other worlds. These other worlds must invade here. These interlapping realities had to be qualified, and the qualifications are the experience. And then sometimes that's all the way done through the scriptures. Most of your major and minor prophets spoke of other worlds. They speak, John, the Revelator, speaks of a new heaven and a new earth that runs into this place.
Okay.
We started with Nostradamus because that was a good, fun place to begin.
Right. Okay, so, but if I mention the parallel worlds to most people, they don't know what I'm referring to.
If you mention, yes, that's correct. And if you mention that about the pharaohs in Egypt, they don't know the order that they came in. If you mention the children of David, King David, who is probably one of the more famous spokespersons of the Christian Church, they wouldn't know other than just the tidbits that are listed historically in Psalms and
people don't know the writings where they are written. They don't know Plato talked about it. They haven't experienced Homer that way. So the people generally don't know. This is a meme that hasn't gotten coverage yet, even though it's in the TV shows. But as a reality,
it's in history all the way through.
Right, but it is not believed or not talked about.
They just leave it alone.
Right,
let it be.
Yeah, it seems that Ion is one of the first to talk about it. No one's heard Ion, you know, many people, but if it gets heard and more, when it gets heard, it'll be the first time it'll be sort of talked about, which, you know, in any kind of
cognitive detail.
Yes, and in a time when many people can hear about it, but just by listening to tapes or hearing radio or something, you know what I mean? A lot more potential, so it is one of the secrets. What am I going to call it a secret? It's one of the lost resorts. It's one of the missing kittens, missing mittens of history that just never got really hoiked up.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Isn't that?
Sure.
And wouldn't it is one of the most important things to know about, would Ion say?
Ask it again, because...
Well, Well, you know, what's more important is that you take yourself wherever you go, that kind of wisdom. But the in terms of physics, how could physics, are they, if you know there's other worlds, does that relate to atoms and electrons and ions?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that would have to be part, the physics knowledge would still be valid if you knew you were slipping. Like, there is a physical explanation among the subatomic particles why Carol and I are slipping between worlds as we walk to the beach. You can explain the ionic exchanges or whatever, right?
Sure.
Because I was thinking that you could, the way, I wouldn't want to know that stuff if I want to image myself going to another world. I mean, to image myself as a figurine and having that experience, I had to think about, well, what were the electrons, what were the ions in there? Or would that be useful to think about the physics of it? As an imaging in your mind, I image differently.
But see, you image differently, so therefore, that's the problem, you see. Because when you start imaging certain ways, then someone else images in a different way. That's the one thing that's not constant. Your recorded history gets to be like yesterday's newspaper.
Right. But the...
Because when you start looking at it that way, yes, he was a great man. Oh, no, he wasn't. Yes, he was a great philosopher. Oh, no, he wasn't. Oh, yes, he had all the secrets to the universe. Oh, he didn't know nothing. And you know, it just...
It goes on and on. The imaging, my images may be different, but I wouldn't want to have to image the subatomic things unless they would help me, but I don't think about that knowledge apparatus too much, the subatomic.
Well, if this... forget it, subatomic, just take it from atomic. The autumnal process of how they can write about other worlds and record it historically that in 2060 some big major event's going to take place, and then you have to wait, you know, a couple hundred years till 2060 gets here, and then all of a sudden it validates itself and it happens that way. Well, was that preset from the future? Was that a collective response from the past? Did, you know, Sir Isaac Newton figure it out and hide it in his prism under the apple tree that set everything up into motion, that figured out that you could take a kaleidoscope and change the lenses and create the whole field of natural philosophy, that you could see the stars if you look through this little tube? You know, you see, because it's all really... Many people get the wrong sets of credit for their right scale of writing.
Right scale of writing?
Yes.
They get, say it again, the rightness of their writing?
The right scale of their writing.
Is judged erroneously, is that what you're...
Yes, yes. It's only the ones that can write get the credit for it, when
right.
It actually may come from someone else.
Right. Okay, so does one, it's like looking for a reason. Do you need images to help your get yourself ready to travel, to riff ride?
Say that one more time so we can make sure
you
we
need,
got it.
Yeah, is it help to have images of the vehicle, of the apparatus you're going through so that you can start riff riding?
No.
Yeah, the imagery, the fact we're made up of subatomic particles and ions or whatever, or even any other structure.
Well, isn't that interesting how you asked that question? That's why we asked you to repeat it. So now we've got a little cleaning up to do. So it's not, did you need this imagery to be able to riff ride? Do you need this imagery to remember your experiences of parallel worlds?
Okay. And you would
you're
say...
You're doing it anyway.
Right, so the imagery is useful if you want to remember.
It can be used as a point of reference that can trick you back into your cognitive knowledge of realities, all realities that you have actually brought into your gaze, and that you also have had a real experience regarding.
Okay, so what imagery?
That was a mouthful, but you'll get it later.
Right. What imagery from subatomics would be helpful? What fact in their world would be helpful?
Okay. We can do this with an example, but it's not your specific field of expertise. But it'll be good for the recording.
Yeah.
Because then you can go, yeah, I don't have a clue what in the world, Ion, you're talking about, but you've recorded it down where maybe somebody else could.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Let's do it this way. You're talking about noticing the tiny, tiny, tiny aspects of molecular structures with protons, neutrons, and atoms and ions.
Yeah.
In particle fields, and you're asking, what about that is significant to give your undivided attention to help you understand the concept of parallel worlds and remembering those, correct?
Yes.
All right. Let's take biology, microbiology.
Right.
They can take and define a germ. What you call atomic or subatomic particle that can identify a virus, a bug, an amoeba, a paramecium. They can identify a tiny, tiny, tiny little speck that actually will give you pneumonia or give you a lesion in your brain.
Right.
Or give you a cancer, or give you, you know, pick something. But in your then we'd ask the question, now, how is that important? Does that help you figure it out? Does that help you remember when you come to a place of trying to figure out how to create a protonic or an antibiotic? Think about a clockmaker, one who makes watches, fine timepieces. Their large mechanical field is based on how to make the tiniest of little gears and gadgets work within a timepiece.
Right.
That they would use jewels, like a 17-jeweled watch. You've heard of that from a long, long time ago.
Right.
Those jewels are tiny crystals. Those tiny crystals would allow the mechanism to operate. Okay?
Yeah.
And now the question is that significant to understand the microbiological aspect of a disease or a fungus or a bug or an amoeba that can put you into a place to where you can go, oh, okay, yeah, that is significant, because if we can understand this, then we can apply it to the body, and then we can look at the body, and if we notice it again, then we can identify this particular strain in the subatomic particle of the nucleus of the cells of the body.
Yeah.
So if we explain it that way, you go, well, of course that is significant. Absolutely. Then we can name it. We can tell what it is. We can watch the body for symptoms that show up. Then if the symptoms show up, that gives us an idea of where to look to validate that this is or is not. They do it now. You have mononucleosis, the kissing disease.
Mm-hmm.
If you have these certain symptoms, then what happens is, then they can do a test. And when they do the test, then they can prove if it is indeed mononucleosis.
Right.
Okay. Here's a quote. Here's a quote that might be interesting. Now, that's enough of that. You got that. Okay? Let's go to Sir Isaac Newton from a reference. Okay? The commandment to return to build Jerusalem may perhaps come forth not from the Jews themselves, but from some other kingdom friendly to them, and precede their return from captivity and give occasion to give it.
That's Newton.
That's interesting, because there you go. That's empirical. That's reference. That is. You see? And that is. And Nostradamus spoke of that, and I'm sure your Edgar Cayce spoke of it. And you see, there are many that would have these references that you're saying that nobody's talking about, but is. Think about it now. Precede their return from captivity and give occasion to it. Now, what that's saying, that's talking about the temple. And the bringing back, that it wouldn't be the Jews themselves, but from some other kingdom. Ta-da.
Does that mean someone working out in the other world?
Yes, Bob, and they say it clear as day. What does "but from some other kingdom friendly to them, and precede their return from captivity, and give occasion to it"? Now think about that. Precede. Mm-hmm. Precede their return from captivity and give occasion to it.
Sounds like the Grand Wilaya Last Resort Project.
Well, exactly. And this is, and the Newton writing's been around for a day or two, huh?
Mm-hmm.
At least 30 minutes or so, anyhow, huh?
In your spans, yes.
Well, okay.
No, long
so,
time.
And then it's preceding from some other kingdom. And then now all of a sudden you can have inference. So is that important? Yes, we would say that is important. And is this a molecular age that has given rise to the knowledge that is being noted and so unnotable to give the unabridged version? Because that's what you're really talking about. You have the abridged and the unabridged.
Mm.
And the unabridged includes it all. The abridged cuts out all the goofy stuff.
Right, so...
No, so if you're talking
how
about...
How did Newton asking, know that? How did Newton know this, what he was writing?
Well, interesting. That very good. He gave his undivided attention to it, noticed the dynamic of the molecular structure. No. He gave notice and rise to all that he knew, saw, recorded, and most of that didn't come from him. It came from those around him, but he was able to write it down, so he got the credit for it.
When you say those around him, other mystics who were studying the Book of Revelations and,
yes,
and things like
yes,
that?
Yes, and references all about you. You get things from people around you, yeah. But if they don't write it down, you end up with the credit for it.
Right, so Newton is known to have, you know, made his discoveries at physics discoveries, early years.
Yes.
And then they were shocked in the 60s or 70s when his papers were sold to, I think it was John Maynard Keynes got his papers, and he was shocked to see that Newton spent most of his adult life analyzing the Bible.
Absolutely.
And was he analyzing the Bible with awareness of other worlds?
Yes.
Was he?
That's why he wrote it that way.
Yeah, was he a riff writer, so to speak?
Yes.
And that'd be why he was sort of celibate. I mean, he's a very abstract person, I've heard, and he ran the exchequer, the chancellor of the exchequer. He had all these public responsibilities and was always a virgin, supposedly. But that'd be because he's only here part of the time.
Right.
Probably had families in other worlds.
He did?
Yeah. That would explain that, wouldn't it? That helps to understand why he wasn't so sensually involved. Sensuously involved in this world. And,
well, now wait a second.
Unless that's not true. You know what I mean?
Well, it's not exactly true. the girth of it is okay, but you see, you can't eliminate every, you know, that's like saying, well, and Jesus never had sex.
Yeah.
And you go, well, great, how do you know that? Oh, well, it says that he was the Messiah. Well, what does that have to do with copulation? See what I mean? So you have issue of how they're recording it, but then does it make, the end of the day, what difference does it make? None. Okay, well then we can call it even. You know, it's like, what divides the West Bank and Gaza? Mm-hmm. Well, that's Jerusalem. Well, so Jerusalem shouldn't have anything to do with it. Well, it does, because that's where it kind of falls through.
Right. So, this is an example.
I said, last time we were on Eben, I said, what is not understood by the public is that most scientific inventions and breakthroughs are done with the help of mediums.
Yes.
The devise, as C.P. Snow wrote about, the two cultures, science and humanities.
Yes.
They don't speak. Well, who knows where that split came from, but part of that split is the esoteric humanities, traveling to other worlds, is involved with major scientists. That's the thing that, if Ion gets a little more publicity, that's a new revelation about history. It's the main one for our time, I would say.
Well, it's significant because you're just now getting to a place ready. Well, Bob, let's just be clear. Can we just be candid for a bit here?
Mm-hmm.
You had to get yourself in a position to where you could field your reality. If this had hit the floor running and moved itself so quickly that you couldn't have embraced and kept up with the whole process, then you would have been waylaid in the whole process.
I understand what you're saying this way.
Yes.
They took this long before anybody's hearing Ion, about Ion. Ion's waiting for Bob and Carol to sort of get the basics.
Kind of, and
yeah.
You are. You're doing marvel. You can't imagine, and because you have the special spiritual gift of being able to through it and or relax and allow through the process of it, that you don't require it to be proven or let science work on it for 100 years that they can't disprove it.
Right.
So if they can't disprove it, then therefore it is. You have the marvelous ability to embrace it. And as you embrace it, see, it's moved you light years ahead of the average bear because you don't push against.
Yeah.
See, you don't have issue with it.
And Carol's like that too.
She absolutely is. Only she does hers a little different way.
Yeah.
She takes the broader concepts and plays with the largeness of it. So it works for her. And you do it the other way. You want every single little word. And every single little word's got to apply and be included. And once it's included, then you can set, okay, this is regarding this, and this is about that, and this is how J.W.'s great-great-great-great-great-grandfather felt when he was making love to his second wife because the first one died, and which child was born, and where they were, and how they did, and what they did, and why they were, and on and on and on and on and on, and that's okay. There's no problem there. It's okay.
I would say that I, for some reason, it's like what you say, I like knowing the being is not that important, though I'm shifting that now, you
mm-hmm.
pointed out. But Carolyn has to be it.
Yes.
If I feel I know it, then that's good enough for me. Almost.
That's correct. That's
yeah.
all. Because then you're not bothered with the circumstances of that reality.
Yeah, I just want to know
about
that.
Yeah. Now think about that, the circumstances of the reality.
Yeah,
the circumstances of the reality. That's very, very significant.
Yeah, no, I understand that. That's why I don't do a lot. I don't even want to get involved in the circumstances, the bother.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But you certainly want the bill of particulars.
Yeah, I want to understand something about it.
All about it.
Yeah.
Not something about it.
Yeah, I want to know all about it.
Damn, wait a minute now. What do you want to ignore? Nothing. You want it all.
Yeah.
Every bit of it. But you just don't want it to negatively or have a necessary causal effect of your reality. But yet you're finding now, however, that it indeed does. Because once you embrace something and you know it, you can't go back. You can't unknow it.
You're saying it does affect the...
It does.
The circumstances, you mean?
Yes, it does. Because it sets your new price of asking and setting up your new threeing experiences. Because until you found out there were parallel worlds, you had a suspicion, but until you found out there's parallel worlds, then you found out that you actually engaged in them. That, see, until that came up, you would never ask. You're not questioning, are there parallel worlds? You're questioning, how do I bring things back and have that experience fresh into my knowing? You're trying to convince your mind.
Right, now...
Now, you can beat the hell out of your body doing it. You can, non-physical can take you and let you drive and have these feeling places and emotions. But that mind, I'm scarred up, I'm blistered up, I'm bruised up, I'm beat up. But I still don't remember. Now I want to remember. I want it the full capacity. Okay, if I'm going to Venice, I want the coin in my hand. I want the blueprints of the Hedron reactor. Mm-hmm. I want the details. And if it gets lost in the mail, I want it to go back to Dobbstown. I want it to get straightened out. I want purple to operate for me the way I want it to operate. Now I want it only what I want that comes to me my way. I want these things, these tactile, rubby, touchy-feely.
I want McLuhan's diary. And
I want
says, well, say thank you. No, I want the diary. I got the diary. Goodbye.
Correct. Precisely. And see, those dynamics. And then not only do you want that, you want to remember how you got it, what you were thinking, how you got there from there, what a marvelous creator you were that orchestrated it and laid it out, how the orchestration applied into your place of being, how you came into this knowing of that all of the schools of higher learning then can go back through and sieve and validate.
That's right.
And make you the valedictorian of the knowledge of the meme of the day.
Right. That's why I have. That's what I'm doing when I'm going back and listening to tapes. I'm finding out how we got here. Right.
Yeah.
Which is.
And once you find that out, see, your questions change. Your threes change. Isn't it interesting that you keep threeing, and then you keep finding things on the 33rd parallel? Isn't it interesting? Do you know the University of King's College in Halifax?
Yes, I've been there.
All right. Their focused goal, primarily, is all about rectifying the historical notions and memes that are in the past that can be used to be able to enlighten the new age.
That is the faculty's agenda?
Well, seemingly so.
It's something that's interesting about King's College. It's right part of Dalhousie. But it was like the odd man out. I don't know who went there. It's like in a void. But occasionally an interesting professor would show up in public and say some interesting things. And he'd be a King's guy. So, you know, think of it as I'm the scientist looking at those something odd over there. They're like not part of our time. They're monks or something.
Pretty much.
It's something like that. So you're saying that they are documenting the bringing in of the Aquarian Age?
Sure. Here's another Newton quote that might help you. The ruin of the wicked nations, the end of weeping, and of all troubles, the return of the Jews' captivity, and their setting up a flourishing and everlasting kingdom. Isaac Newton.
Wow. Did you
you say they were in captivity? That was one of the phrase's meanings?
Correct.
Yeah.
And see, so, and then we say Nostradamus. You say, yeah, that was one. No, that was just one that's notable. Now they turn around and try to turn the meme into a whole different thing and try to make every aspect of living in life as it is now as a Nostradamus effect.
That's what they're trying to do, did you say?
That's what they're doing.
And they're doing that at King's University?
They are.
So what triggered King's to get into that sort of field, that area? My presence there?
No, oh no, yeah, it is. It's no, Bob. It's Carolyn. It's all about Carolyn.
Oh, okay.
It's not you. It's Carolyn. No, that's no. Just simmer down. You all right? Ain't nobody hurt. It's their dynamic of understanding that the largeness that is the creation has to confound. Otherwise, they won't give it any attention.
The largeness of the creation has to confound.
Confound. To confound the mind. Because if it becomes normal and you understand it and it's just microbiology and you just use an antibiotic to take care of it, no, that doesn't get anybody's attention. That's the norm.
But Nostradamus got their attention.
He did. Because he went outside those compounds. He went outside what was normal. He went beyond what was the acceptable meme of the day and queried and quizzed the mind so much so that it got larger than the mind could embrace.
No, bright swallow.
Swallow, yes, okay, that's good. And then when that happens, then guess what happens? You wrap yourself into a new place, and that new place gets to question where answers will be questioned.
Well, Ion is presenting a new conundrum as people listen to its abilities or its eloquence. So King's University, whatever department that is, they probably would be very interested in Ion.
Very likely so, because it would use their own. See, the fun part of playing with non-physical is that non-physical takes it from the individual asker's rectification of notion. Rectification of notion. Different creators think differently about different degrees of tactility.
Yeah.
And see, we can use this vernacular and it goes just really well, but let Connie start putting that in book form and she's pulling out everybody's hair.
Yeah.
Because it's a larger focus, you see. We're trying to get it across, not trying to explain it to the whole wide world.
Yeah.
And that's what you were making reference to earlier, which was made J.W. feel so much better because he thought he wasn't doing enough or wasn't doing it right or it wasn't appropriate or the words weren't flowing correctly. And we kept saying, you know, okay, tear your little self apart over this or let it be, and it'll unfold and work itself out. You've done everything you're supposed to do the way you're supposed to do it. Now relax and allow and let it be.
Yeah.
And if you're not willing to do that, then you have a question with your 3D process in the beginning place.
Mm.
And so he has been very, very, very deliciously doing just that, and it's been very, very the awakening chorus for him, because then he can not get too tangled up with it. Or what is it you'd say? You make a mistake when you take yourself so seriously.
Yeah.
You know.
But I was thinking that the in response that in a couple of years we'll look back, and even though it was all fun and no problem, maybe a little concern, look back, we'll say, geez, we had a tiger by its tail.
Yes, indeed.
You know what I mean?
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And that's correct. And you're looking at it like, well, I want it to go faster. 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 And then after a little while, you go back and you've been all these months and you're on number 28.
Yeah.
answer. So when you look at it that way, it's going pretty damn fast, Bob.
Yeah.
when you stand off a bit, when you go into a larger perspective, it's light years.
Right. Yeah.
But when you're in the notion, in the promotion of the notion, it seems like one more reading and five more hours and what and how do we get there from here and where were we when we had that and this is this and that is that and how did this get to that and what are we talking about? And I had a great question. No, I had a great answer. Oh, I forgot what we were talking about. See, so, but that's okay because in your marvelous creation of your recordability allows a whole fullness of it allows the span that it takes from the utterance of the words till it becomes indelibly in your knower.
Yeah.
It provides you that ability to have that span to let you catch up with you.
Yeah.
And it's perfect.
Right. Now, so I've established a basic foundation after 26 sessions, I guess.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I got some basic.
But it's a little more basic, Bob. You got the outline.
Right, the outline.
You got the outline, and the outline actually covers it pretty much.
Yeah.
And the first beginnings of that was just getting it in line to figure out what you wanted to figure out.
Yeah.
And now you've taken that and run with it.
Right. Now, the tiger by the tail. It strikes me that you couldn't have gotten two more perfect people than two people who had time in their hands to do this 4 or 5 hours a day in a great environment, which was part of the third parallel. It all fits so perfectly, and the kind of temperament we have, or the open mind.
You relaxed and allowed it.
Yeah, we relaxed.
J.W. relaxed and allowed it. J.W. didn't push against much of anything. He sat back on his laurels and watched the whole wide world and just embraced it. And there wasn't anything wrong, and there wasn't any problem, and there wasn't, if there was contrast, it just allowed him to redefine his focus, and that's all. It let him figure what was important or not, and if the whole wide world said, no, 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 he didn't notice, you see, I mean, the floods came, but it didn't bother him, he enjoyed the moisture, it was great.
Yeah, so, that I'm just saying the situation that we've got ourselves into, it almost couldn't happen any other way.
Well, it could.
It could.
But this was the choice. This was the chosen way.
Yeah.
Now you take your power back. You're such a marvelous creator. You orchestrated and said, no, 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 no. My way or the highway. It's got to be this way. Now, not in a cheeky way, because you would never encroach, and neither would J.W. He would quit before he negotiated anybody's generosity.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's not like that at all. It's always embraceable, and it unfolds. So, for him, this marvelous thing called life is marvelous. Even with its contrast sometimes. But he finds less and less and less and less contrast. If you remember back, he would make a quote, you know you're on the right path, Bob, when the cares of life grow strangely dim. That's quotable. You know, here's how you know you're on the right path. When the cares of life grow strangely dim.
Yeah.
And anytime that's the case, then you know you're on the right path. And if you're not on the right path, then the cares of life will not be dim. Ta-da.
Right. Now, there is the psychology where people like to have cares. There's that.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Obviously. And yet you deny and try to deny and make it somebody else's fault. It's poor Obama's fault. It's the government's fault. It's the senator's fault. It's the municipality's fault. It's mama's fault. It's daddy's fault. It's my lineage. It's my heritage. It's my screwed up miscegenation in my lineage that has screwed up everything. Well, see, then all that's doing is giving your power to whatever you're calling the problem of the moment. Then you could take your power back. Then you could say, no, 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 no. I'm the marvelous creator. You can't make a mess like this if you're not a marvelous creator. You can't screw it up this badly unless you're in complete and controlling charge of it. You can't get there from there. They're not powerful enough to screw you over this well.
So Obama could celebrate what a marvelous creator is, that he created such a mess.
He didn't.
Mm.
He didn't. The individual creators are trying to blame him for why they are less than, or have lack, or not abundant. Well, they are abundant, they're just abundant in poverty.
Yeah.
They're abundant. Pressed down, shaken together, overflowing. More than they can contain. Because of the, and if they saw it that way, they'd go away. If there really is this much abundance, why can't we have an abundance of bliss? Why can't we have an abundance of joy? Well, the answer to that is they don't know what their joy is. They can't even tell what kind of weather they want. They don't know how hot or cold it is, so how they want to move the thermometer. Oh, well, we'll have to check and see what the TV body says the weather's going to be. Isn't that interesting that the meteorologist can tell you what the forecast is, but then they don't believe in non-physical giving them insight as to what their next future experience is going to be. But they can tell you next Thursday afternoon at 2:15 it's going to rain. But that's different. That's science. Yeah, that's for you. Uh-huh. Good luck with that.
So... what would, if Ion was asked by Obama for a consultation and he asked you about what should he do, what could he do to do whatever he thinks he has to do, I don't want to just say to improve his image, what would be an example of what Ion would tell him?
Well, we would...
You need a question?
Well, that's not at all what we were making reference to or talking about. We were trying to inform you human creators.
No, I understood what you were getting. Obama had,
yeah.
You were describing the Obamaites who were using him as an image for flagellation, you know, for their own problems. But Obama...
But those are the same ones that he was the only one on the planet Earth that could provide the change and the reform that was going to save the day.
Did he believe that?
We don't. It doesn't matter what he believed. It's what the individual human creators believed.
What they project on him, you mean?
Exactly.
So he accepted that projection. Did he accept that projection?
Well, he's president, isn't he?
Yeah.
He allowed it into his experience, didn't he?
Right, but how...
I mean, he is president, right?
Right, well...
We'll have to check with you creators, because y'all know better than us meager, non-physical.
That's right. So he accepted it. Did he learn since he became president have some different views of it?
Well, you'd have to ask him, but the answer obviously is absolutely. Look at this, and here's the evidence. You want the evidence? Oh, let's get that evidence.
Yeah.
Let's call a Senate subcommittee and review... and have the Senate review and see what reality really is, and then we'll look at the 911 report and see what really was, and all that kind of foolishness. But if you look at his words, his speeches, his candor, we went from we had a dream to we give all we can give, and y'all gonna have to suck it up now. Correct?
Yeah.
Well, now wait a minute. How'd we go from we have a dream to y'all messed this up and too big to fail is not going to work anymore? But you don't really have to worry because the insurance companies are all going to kill you way before that you have to worry about this national debt.
Why would the insurance companies kill you?
Because he's trying to give national health care to everybody.
Right. And that will kill us in terms of the expense?
No, that if you don't spend another $100 billion to provide insurance and well care and take everyone's power as a human creator away from them and give it to the doctors of your land who work for the insurance companies of your land that set this all up as what the reality is, to take all your power to for your own wellness, your own well-beingness away from you, then you won't live long enough to be bothered by the national debt, however incredulously large.
Okay.
And we're not beating up on that. We love and appreciate and support that contrast that the executive branch has given us. Gosh, since Andrew Jackson.
Yes, it serves as a contrast.
It does, and it's a wonderful one. Because then you got to come back to the place. They've had some very good quotes over the years, but some of the, what you call the very best presidents are some of the ones that have the least notoriety. Before Woodrow Wilson, there was no such thing as a population of millionaires.
Right, and so what's that mean?
Well, he came into the place to say it's okay to be a millionaire.
Oh, he helped us.
Well, there weren't many millionaires. There wasn't such a thing as millionaires back before him.
Then how did he, what did he implement to make it acceptable?
That there was abundance. And that the best thing that could happen to the United States of America is for everybody to be a millionaire.
Sorry. You there?
Yes.
Yeah.
But the best thing in the world, the best thing in the world to do is have everybody be a millionaire. Everybody's a millionaire, and nobody has problem paying taxes. Well, if nobody has problem paying taxes, then infrastructure can be built. And if somebody's going to croak, they're going to croak anyway, and then get excited about it. They're in charge and control of their own reality, and leave them and what they think about it out of the equation.
So Woodrow Wilson opened it up somehow.
He did. But you look at your recording, you go to his library, and he doesn't have much to say about it.
Hmm. So, and you're considering him one of the more bland presidents, or?
Ooh.
I mean,
no, we're saying that you see him as one of the more bland presidents.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
Everything goes back to Abraham Lincoln, that he was the apostle by which all presidents should be judged.
Right.
And all he did was take things back to the lowest common denominator of saying, get over yourself and let's get on with this thing called living. Right?
And that didn't work.
Well, it's worked great so far. It made the $5 bill, so I guess it's good for something.
But you're saying he's known as the ultimate, and yet are you implying Woodrow Wilson did more?
Indeed.
Right. Who's it? What's another bland image to the president that did stuff like Woodrow Wilson, same caliber or achievement?
McKinley.
Okay. And who killed McKinley? Who set that up?
He did.
All right, he set it up. Who made it possible to get so he could get what he wanted? Who joined in, you know, the murderer? Since he was a murderee, who cooperated with him?
The assistant to his chief of staff.
And what did the assistant know to make him vibrate with McKinley's wants?
The dynamic of the rise and fall of the rise and fall of his power.
The assistant had a problem with that?
No, the assistant knew that, and that's what helped facilitate the demise.
So he was on his decline, the president.
Well, your history records it. What is, how does it go, Bob?
I don't know. Is he 1900? I think he's 1900, 1901.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know what he accomplished, but if you read...
Well, he certainly have lots of questions, so, okay.
Yeah, there is different literature on it, and one of them says that the British, the Queen, the royal family, the oligarchs, were upset with what McKinley was doing on a national level, and they did it. But it doesn't sound like that's actually what happened.
No, 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 no.
It was more local.
Of course. It always is, see? Because, you know, these problems and these issues and these things have to get in your bed. Well, it's not in the Queen's bed. It's in your bed.
Right.
Now, can you push against or vice versa to make it an issue? Certainly. But it's what's the motivation.
So what, the rise and fall of his power, what was that the assistant was noticing?
The flow, that everything was becoming this vast fullness of dynamic. You got to realize the big thing in those days was, are we going to put everybody on a grid? Okay, and if we put them on a grid, is it going to be an AC or a DC grid?
Right.
Okay, who's going to pay for all this? Okay, then there's this little thing called a telephone.
Right.
That now you can talk through a string and a can and find out what's going on everywhere. Then you have the world that's becoming a booming, voluminous, you're coming into the Iron Age.
Right.
You're starting in having these iron horses that are ride you around in the horseless carriage.
Right.
But it's built in combustion engines that provide horsepower.
Yes.
Very interesting. So then you got to have this full infrastructure of, okay, we've got these iron horses. They're great. Now, how are we going to build roads? And then he looked at history and go, wait a minute, the Roman Empire did that road business, and it didn't serve them very well either. They built the roads, but they couldn't maintain them.
Right.
We need some slaves. Oh, wait, we got over that. Wait a minute. You see? So it's just the twists and turns of what you call cabinet work.
Cabinet work as a carpenter or cabinet in the Washington?
Well, we're talking about the executive branch,
yeah.
So
cabinet
you
work.
Draw your own conclusion. Now, look here. Well, now, let's think about this now. You brought it up. A cabinet man, a carpenter, oh wait, that's like Jesus, okay, easy. A cabinet man looks at it and he creates, what does a cabinet man do? He creates vessels in order to store items in a secure and organized format.
Yep.
And then the detail or the finish work is how these cabinets are decorated. Do they have glass doors? Do they have doors at all? Are they just shelves? Is this compartmentalized? When you open them up, does it have things for everything to fit where it's supposed to be? Is it a storage ability to amass larger amounts of things? So now your cabinet, whether you're creating the cabinet or whether you are embracing the cabinet, what it does is it organizes your flow of thought. That's what a good president's cabinet would do. And when you think about it that way, you are exactly perfectly correct to ask, is this a cabinet maker? Or is this as the executive branch has a cabinet of 15? And we say they are about the same if you look at their definitions.
Right.
So that was, once again, Bob, a spot-on place of you just throwing darts by the handful and amazed that something hit the wall.
Okay, so what's interesting, to the degree Ion gets this for me, it's interesting you bringing up the technologies of the day, which is the way I think, and the pressures that put on the executive. And so that there was this abundance happening, but it caused a lot of anxiety or concern
and it was too much for McKinley, and the assistant saw that.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying. So did the assistant arrange the people to kill him?
Indirectly.
Well, how? What part is direct?
Well, you're not going to get that.
Oh, okay. Now, why wouldn't I get that? That's a long time ago.
Well, because then you should be able to look at your history and see what it says. Because we're going to have to push against then we'd have to push against the very fall of the Roman Empire, because that's where you're going next. And when you start from that side, it's a reference point that you can't get there.
Well, I don't think I was talking about the fall of the Roman Empire. Just I'm talking about the stresses on his life, where he wanted to do suicide himself, and an assistant picked up on it. And I was wondering how he found someone to do it.
Through the cabinet.
Through the cabinet. So who succeeded? Roosevelt?
No. No. It was the. You're going to have to look at your empirical references, because that's pretty easily.
Yeah, I'm just going to check that now. I think Teddy Roosevelt was vice president.
I think so.
Okay, let me just see. So this is McKinley. Then they show you immediately his predecessors and all that. President, there is 25th, 1843. Vice President Garrett Hobart.
Yeah.
No, that's the first guy. This at 1901, it was Theodore Roosevelt. And then preceded by Grover Cleveland, succeeded by Theodore Roosevelt. So Mr. Roosevelt might have been involved in this. And then that would be why you've got to be quiet about it.
Well, of course, Bob, because...
Right. The Roosevelts. All right. No, that's a major icon. You got to be careful with that name. You know what I mean?
Got that right.
Yeah, see. So you're implying that Mr. Teddy...
we are not implying anything. You are making a statement of contrast, not us.
Right, but you... and you won't confirm it.
Wow. Well, if you'll tell us if you're still beating your wife.
Yes, I'm still beating her.
Oh, okay. But you acknowledge
we got that over
you
are
indeed.
What?
You acknowledge that you are indeed.
Yes, I am beating my wife.
Your wife. Good. That's good.
Anybody who's noticed, been around us the last 40 years, noticed the psychological abuse that I put Carolyn through.
Good.
Even JW has noticed it. And so, yeah, so I've said my part. Now you can pony up. You said if I told you I was doing it, answer the question.
And there were flashes of lightning, voices, pearls of thunder, and a great earthquake. And every island fled away, and no mountain were found to be found. And the great hailstones dropped on men from heaven.
Who's that? Is that Newton again?
No, that's Revelation.
Okay, but you said all that. That's a digression.
No, it's not.
Not in my universe.
We just ponied it up. Well, you just fasten your little seatbelts, and we shall see.
Well, wait a minute. Did Theodore Roosevelt? Don't lose your words, Bob. It says on my album. Don't lose your words, Bob. The caller said, and recorded and put on my album. So Teddy Roosevelt was one of the cabinet members who made this possible. The removal of they satisfied McKinley's wants.
Yeah.
Yes, and that's all that has to be said, right?
That's good enough.
Yeah, excellent. We walked right into that one. We were talking about...
Boy, and we tiptoed out of it, too. Let me tell you, sports fan.
Okay, well, does that affect the psychology of Franklin Roosevelt as a young man growing up in that kind of, quote, mafia environment... or violent environment, that must affect a young person's psyche, or he wanted to have that. Did Franklin Roosevelt co-create his father doing that? You know what I mean? Can the son participate in the parents' creations? You follow that?
And we would like to just say emphatically, and we are, yes.
Right. And so it becomes in the gene, in the meme.
And the rest of your days undoing that.
Yeah.
Great. But from the way you asked it, that answer would be yes.
Yeah, so the some people say that Roosevelt betrayed his own class and, you know, helped the working man with the beginning of the welfare state. If we take that as something beneficial to people, considering the 30s, then we could see why he defected from his class, his level, out of guilt. That, I mean, nobody, it seems that the other wealthy people didn't know why he betrayed them. And this is all rumor, what I've heard, and I don't know if any of it's true, but these are the urban legends. So if, but one could understand that he defected from his class because of the burden that he knew. You follow what I'm saying? I could explain why he defected from his class. He knew too much. And it's just like the Evergreens said that Lawrence Rockefeller did a lot of ecology and good work, supposedly, out of guilt for what the Rockefellers had done. You know what I mean? You follow that?
Never.
You don't follow that?
Yes, we follow, but that's...
not true. You don't...
There's always a dividing place of let's work for the little man because the little man will carry our gold to the vault.
There's always that, regardless of guilt or not.
Absolutely. He wasn't guilty, for Pete's sake. If he was guilty, why didn't he give all of his money away?
Right.
If he was guilty, why didn't he go give it all back and undo it? Then he'd have that great, wonderful burden relieved eternally. And there was not a good work that you could do that would undo this supposed nastiness that was.
Yeah.
So, you know, man, please. If that's the case, why spend the rest of your days undoing all you've done and just say, okay, I don't want her, you can have her, she's too fat for me. Here's all the money back, I'm good. Now I didn't do anything bad, I didn't do anything wrong, and whatever I did I gave back and we can call it a day. Any questions? Oh wait, my phone number is unlisted. So what you and you think about it, we'll just leave out of my knowing in reality. So, and now if it's an evolving process in which you look at the world a different place, fine, but see...
Gotcha. We get that. All right. New topic.
Oh, thank goodness.
I've gotten 12 symbols from Chad now.
Yes.
I recall there's going to be about 13.
Yes.
And then JW said, and James said,
two
a couple.
Keys.
Beg your pardon?
Two keys.
Yeah, that's what James adds.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're very
what
close.
Well, now, we say James adds, okay?
Yeah.
That's up to James.
Right.
So you don't go pushing into that.
I don't say anything, right.
That's, and
I will ask him to rescind the symbol, see if he can do it again, because it failed last time. Yeah, that's okay to ask him to see if he could send what he was trying to send.
Okay. Oh, okay.
If he doesn't do it, you don't hassle him about it, you know.
Well, good, because... It'll you'll undo creation.
Yeah.
It's got to flow because you can't push it because then you'd have to take on two and one into your experience and you've got rules regarding that. You don't take care of that up. You just three.
Yeah.
You know, that's what happened to the Minoans. They got to pushing and forcing and the next thing you know, there wasn't anything left.
The Minoans, is that the volcano? Creed.
No, Bob. That's the ones that just got swallowed up and they just disappeared.
The Minoans. Are they over in the Pacific, you mean?
Far Pacific, yeah.
The, is this today's earthquake near Vanuatu?
No. This is...
Yeah, the Minoans, they're...
long time back.
Yeah, and they're near Crete, aren't they?
They are.
In the Mediterranean. And are they the ones that had that famous volcano, Pompeii?
No. Close, but not exactly.
But they got swallowed up by what?
Water.
Oh, okay. And they disappeared. What were they pushing against?
Just exactly what you were describing 2 seconds ago.
To get some symbols from somebody?
No. Forcing the issue.
Right. Right. Forcing the issue.
Pushing, 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 pushing.
Okay. So we've got 12 symbols from Chad. Another one soon. He may send more. That'll be okay. But we're going to have...
If he does, that's even more wonderful, because then you're going to set the calipers.
The calipers in the image, or we're going to set...
No, the calipers in the
formula.
Well...
The pattern.
Okay, yes, okay. Yeah. You're right. Always. But that's not exactly right. But
yeah.
Yes, you're there. So that's close enough.
That'll be a refinement, the calipers.
Well, it'll be the next tier.
Oh, yeah, right.
You haven't even asked the question yet. Let's just take a second, and let's embrace this just a little bit. We've been hitting the ball and dragging Harry for a good long ways here, getting into this place of this information that you're just busting a gut for.
Yeah.
And want more than life itself. and engaging it and relaxing and allowing and being
right. I'm threeing it so much. I don't even feel the gut busting, but I wouldn't deny it's there. But I don't feel
yes.
it because I three it.
Okay.
Right.
But
that's what we mean, right?
Yes, but you want it.
Yeah, I think it's going to be because a friend of mine was talking about sacred geometry and that physicist Nassim Harim we were talking about, and then I
one in Hawaii.
Yeah, and then Ion said, there's no sacred geometry, so I'm thinking, well, what we got with Chad coming in, it's not sacred geometry, but it's probably better and the real stuff. So I thought, well, it'll be fun having this stuff. So,
Yes, indeed. And that's okay, no harm, no foul. But the point of what we're trying to get to is you haven't asked what this symbols are supposed to do.
Right, and I'm sort of waiting till they all come in?
I have no idea.
No, I am. I am waiting for them, the 13, then I will...
I know, but it would have been our very first question. When we get it, then what?
Well, I assumed that would be unfolded. I relaxed a lot about that.
Well, I know, but that becomes a... Okay.
It's like you're hankering to get into it.
We are busting, trying to get you there faster and faster and faster.
All right. What am I going to
do? Only from the standpoint of it will help answer some of your
ongoing
aberrated, silly queries that don't make any difference about anything. And that's okay, because we'll play at your level, Bob. We don't mind. We love playing with you.
Yes.
No harm, no foul. But, you know, if you ask one more time, when are you going to find a mate, and am I going to be happy when I get old? And
I don't ask those questions.
You don't, but you get so close to them, it gets to be over the top, and that's okay, because it's just those places, but it's an evolving thing. When you get this information, all those other questions that you would play with become... almost nonsensical.
Okay,
That's okay.
So my question is, what are we going to do with this once we get it from Chad? Is that the that was the question, wasn't it?
That's not the one you want to ask. If you had it and it was explained, what does that do for you?
Yeah, what am I supposed to do with it? What to do?
Well, we'll show you what to do with it, but that's not the question. The question is, if I knew what to do with it, what would I know?
All right, what would I know? What would I know if I knew what to do with it? What would I get?
You would have the ability to navigate
a black hole?
Any portal and be able to identify where the portals are.
Mm.
And how to activate them if they have become dormant or in a state of dormancy.
Yeah.
Well, isn't that like the secret knowledge of all secret knowledge that humans yearn for, those that are inclined to investigate those areas?
Well, we don't see it as so secret. All you had to do is, it wasn't kept a secret from you. We had to tell you what to ask, and you asked, and we answered.
Right, but to have that information.
Now think about that now. Think about that.
No.
It's not a secret. If we told you what to ask, and then you asked, and then we answered, okay, it's not too secret. Now, the interesting part is that you're the marvelous human creator that didn't know what to ask. But that's perfectly okay. You've got all of non-physical rooting for you, Bob.
Yeah.
Because we know you're not going to engage non-physical for anything except for asking what it is you're supposed to ask. And then after that, you're just going to three it, enjoy the hell out of it, move on down the road. Hey, Carolyn, do we need a legend to figure out what portals are and how to activate them and where to go through them and where they go? Hey, Carolyn, is that how we do? Do we do it that way? Yeah, now, Carolyn, when we go through these portals, how do we figure out how to remember? Well, we look at the legend. Is this legend going to tell us why we wanted to know this stuff, or is it just going to be kind of thing? And then when you get there, if we eat asparagus here, Carolyn, does that mean we eat asparagus over there, too? Carolyn, do you know for sure if they have Snicker bars over there? I ain't going if they ain't got Snicker bars. And not only do I have Snicker bars, I want to remember slide down my throat. Oh. Now, if that legend that this mythical non-physical presence is providing us, if it doesn't give the all-important question of what about the degree of Snicker bar consumption, then I don't even want to know the question. I'm not playing.
Okay, you're playing fine, but it's not true. Okay.
I understand. Yeah. I understand. We're being extreme.
Being extremely cheeky.
Not so much for you, not necessarily, not necessarily, not particularly.
This is for the audience that hears this in 1,000 years?
Pretty well, sort of.
You're playing to the audience. When Ion says we love to play, we now know it means play to the audience. Ham it up.
Yes, indeed. And it's so fun because when you listen to it that way, you start going, well, yeah, you know, it's kind of interesting. Why wouldn't have I noticed or asked that question? I'm collecting them. I'm stacking them. I'm preserving them. I have the culpable responsibility for their power and this all-knowing and all-knowledge that's coming into my face. And it never once dawned on me to ask, hey, what's this all the knowledge of?
Yeah, is that... Well, that's really thrilling.
It really is. It's kind of like, here you go, and then you go, okay, thanks. And now, 2 weeks later, okay, I have these. I got 9, I got 10, I got 11. Now, if I get them all, we'll go from there. What am I getting? What is this going to do? How is this going to change all of creation that I'm looking at? It's kind of like, oh, well, that doesn't matter. When they get there, they'll get there. It'll be good.
I'm good. Love you, beat it. Never get it done. It's always enough. I take that too literally.
Well, no. It's okay, but then you come to the place and you go, yeah, that would have come up in conversation, you think, after this long a time.
Well, I hear something that occurs to me is that we cover so many topics, and I take them serious as we're doing them, that they just get lost in the in basket. I mean, oh, the secret of the universe came in. Yeah, well, we did that last Tuesday.
right.
We did that last, and Wednesday, we did a whole bunch of stuff on the Knights of Malta on Thursday, and then we did bacteria. Then we did hurricanes. Sorry, it's too many topics. So I'm not complaining, but that's my alibi.
It's okay. It's perfectly fine because you get them in later time. You get them later.
Yeah.
And then they become, once you get it, you're good. It's kind of like, okay, yep, I know. Yep, I know. Yep, I know.
In a way, I'm a collector of sort of ideas, like JW's a collector of objects. Or plates, you know what I mean? I collect ideas. I mean, he. When does he go and look at those things? Occasionally. He'll get around to it. Right? The things that he buys. I'll get around to what I've collected. When I get 5 minutes, we have more shipments coming in every day.
Yes, indeed, and it's great fun.
Okay,
great,
so great what are joy. they...
Oh, yeah, you told me what they're for. The portal knowledge. Now, I forgot already. Now, this knowledge is in the Vatican?
Yes.
Are they using it, or have they forgotten it?
No. No, wait. That's two questions.
Yeah, are they using it?
Yes.
So that means they haven't forgotten it. This Vatican guy...
Good, very good. Got it.
Yeah, so these guys are pretty clever, or pretty involved.
Well, now, yeah. Not so much. Their cleverness precludes the engaging. They're more afraid of other human creators getting a hold of it than they are of embracing and engaging and loosening it within even Vatican City.
Right. Is that some old meme of paranoia that they're holding on to? They've been doing this for so long, they're good at it, and they don't know the world's changed. And what they're protecting is not as precious as what they used to think it was, right? Is there something like that going on?
No, Bob. They know how precious it is.
And they ain't sharing it. That's the thing.
Correct.
They're not going to share it. Now, I know you said months ago, the Vatican, or you may have said, the Pope ain't going to like what we're doing, Bob. He's going to be able to have an issue with what they hear we're doing. That's on the horizon as we get more well-known.
Logically, yes. But see, if they engaged us, then they'd have problems because we'd tell them where all the stuff is and how it is and what they have, and they don't want to engage in that kind of... They don't want to have a deposition regarding that, you see.
Right.
So they're gonna let that sleeping dog lie or teach it to heal.
Right, so in the TV show Warehouse 13...
Oh, wait, we didn't finish. We did 4400, but you didn't do sliders. Were you not interested in that anymore?
I forgot, but we'll go back to that. But just to finish this thought, Warehouse 13, the Vatican is Artie, and we're McPherson. But we're not violent, but we're kind of like in the position of McPherson, who's sort of liberating the warehouse, maybe not exactly, but Artie is protecting and keeping it a secret. You follow what I'm saying?
He doesn't even have a clue, though. No, Artie is not. Artie would open it up and just collect it and control it and embrace it. And that's no more. That is not Vatican. That's not even a Vaticanese. They don't want to keep it for the council or the papacy of the people who judge what Artie and Mrs. Frederick does.
Yeah.
It's not even about that. It's just the whole dynamic of the place that is. And he would engage it. No, they wouldn't have a problem with that.
Okay. If the public could know about it, he wouldn't have a problem with that.
Or were they putting it on the TV chip body?
So, yeah, it's a documentary. It's a documentary.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay. Oh, is there a warehouse like that with those kind of artifacts?
Well, of course, Bob.
Does the Vatican have one?
Yeah, of course, Bob.
Does the 418 gang have one?
Can't really tell the difference.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's an interesting statement. And then we have Area 54 in Ohio or Indiana, Wright Air Force Base. That's a warehouse, right? Correct? The warehouse there.
Of course. That's,
I mean, there are people who think the Vatican, the Jesuits, are causing a lot of the turmoil today.
Now, wait a second. Those are different. Catholic, and just because you're Catholic doesn't mean you're Jesuit.
That's right.
Just because you're Jesuit doesn't mean you're Catholic. But which one do you mean?
So when we talk about the 418 gang...
No, now which one were you talking about before?
Yeah, I'm coming back to that. If you take the 418 gang...
Okay.
The Vatican has its representatives in that group. Or some parts of the Vatican. I don't know.
Why would that need to be? Why?
Well, what's the difference between the Vatican and 418?
You add no, yes, but no is from your question.
Yeah.
You ask the question.
Does the Vatican have a warehouse?
No, you asked, is there such a thing as a real warehouse?
Yes, with those kind of artifacts.
Yes. No, well, not those. Leave those kind of artifacts out of it. They have artifacts.
Great. Okay.
Yes. Does the Vatican City have them? Yes. Does the 418 have them? Yes. Okay? And then we got to the next dynamic when you were trying to figure out if the Roman Empire had representation
in the 418.
The 418, and we're like, and all we said was, we can't seem to tell the difference. And then you took that strapping agreement and turned it into, so the Catholic Church has infiltrated the 418. And then on and on and on, and we're like, whoa. You know, we could just as easily say, does the people in the Vatican enjoy oxygen? We'd say yes. Does the 418 enjoy oxygen? Yes. Oh my God, it's a conspiracy. I knew they were trying to take over oxygen. And they've drug it into the United States, and they've powered, and the power brokers and the Bilderbergers paid for all this. And they're going to soon start charging for the air and start controlling which parts of we get air if we can afford their money. And turn loose the artifacts and control them, and then we're going to have to go rob the basement of Vatican City to find out that there are two sub basements in the Vatican complex where rows and rows and rows and rows and rows of things are stashed.
Who built those sub basements? They built in Roman times. Were they built in the Egyptian time? But they're always there?
We could easily say yes and confound you.
Yeah.
But so the answer is yes, and that confounds you. But the origination of what is the 114 acres, which is Vatican City.
Yeah.
The country. They were a part of which empire before they were?
The Roman Empire.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And what were the Romans very good at?
Collecting things.
No, they lost more than they collected. Focusing their energies into aquifers.
Right.
And subterranean places.
So the Vatican's built on a building that was built by Romans for other purposes. You know, the basements, the sub-basement, underwater, under the surface part. It was there before Christ showed up.
Yeah.
That's
fair.
Yeah. Now, so...
You said it the right way by not leaving, not angling time in it.
Yes.
Saying when you get the catch words right.
Yeah. So the 418, the point is the 418 have their artifacts, the Vatican has different artifacts.
No, we didn't say that either.
Okay.
We weren't disagreeing with you.
Does the Vatican know about the 418 group?
Yes.
All right, they're in touch. Love you, mean it, they say to each other, right? No. Okay, here's an interesting question.
Depends on which pope you're praying to.
Right.
Depends on how that relationship's working out.
Okay, here's a personal question. I have a friend. On my chart, in the Bob Dobbs quadrant, I have the movie King of Comedy. And I once said I want to be the funniest person I've ever lived. It looks like these sessions with Ion would be someday very entertaining for people, and we just may pull off the funniest stuff ever. Do you see that?
Do you mean comical, or do you mean weird? Because you're already that.
Yeah, weird, but the interaction with Ion that we're getting on tape, all the different styles of interaction, if people got to hear them, they might find them very entertaining.
Logically, yeah.
We may be producing the greatest audio yet. in terms of the preposterous. Here's someone talking to someone else, and one claiming to be non-physical, and the other one's accepting that. That's a pretty unique thing. I think a lot of the stuff's probably funny if you heard it, not even depending on your level of comprehension. So I was just thinking this could be the funniest stuff ever made. Do you see that as a potential? Is that why Ion's playing it up, knowing that it'll be a great comedy in the long run?
Well,
no. You're here to spark people. That's a side issue, not significant.
If you have to open a comedy club to get people to the notion that they have a meat sack body and they have non-physical through the labyrinth of their mind, and if you could, end of the day, laugh yourself into convincing your own beingness that you are hitting on all cylinders and that you are can be, do, or have anything you'd like to be, do, or have, and that you have all of the helps that are providable, but you don't need any of them, but you have all the helps that are providable. If that needs to be a laugh-in, a Martin and Rowan laugh-in, then fabulous.
Right.
Okay? We don't care. Build the flagpole tall enough to let the flags flow. Make everybody on the planet raise tea so you can have a revolution, to have a Boston Tea Party where they turn the bay into tea. You know,
yeah.
Whatever it takes, it's just fine.
Okay, does is there a way we could present Ion in some public format here on Maui? Does Ion see that happening at some point?
Wrong question. Is it your desire, Bob?
I'm not sure. I think I wouldn't mind it if it was successful, or if it was, it had an audience. But we wouldn't know until we tried it, so it'd be a nice probe.
What would you do if you couldn't fail, Bob?
That's right, can't fail.
No, what would you do? You can fail. You can eliminate every possibility you're trying to achieve. You can, you know, you're so free, you can choose bondage. It's okay
right.
with us. So.
Ion has no problem with what venue it's presented in.
JW does, but we
okay.
don't.
All right. Okay, that's a factor. Yeah, JW. All right. So I discuss it with JW.
Yeah, but you know you already know how that goes. JW doesn't care, but he's not gonna, you know, participate in tomfoolery.
Right.
Just so you can get a shock and awe that, you know, that.
Are you there?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm just changing. So. Not doing shock and awe, just thinking that there might be an audience here in Maui for Ion. Am I too low?
Way low.
Oh, okay.
It's okay.
All right, let me just get this.
You're doing fine.
I was saying that be nice to have an audience here in Maui.
Okay. Then three that, and then it will be, and then they will be. We're good.
Okay. All right. Just going to finish up this.
Twin Peaks had portal stuff in
yeah.
it. What in popular entertainment, it could be just radio, where did the idea of going to other worlds begin? Did it begin with H.G. Wells kind of stuff, Jules Verne?
No, it became with mythology.
Mythology way back there.
Well, of course, Bob, because
right.
they lived in other worlds.
Okay, within the movie world and TV world.
Well, then now you're limiting it to just
yeah.
the 40s.
Yeah.
So.
And that's
okay,
that's
a great span of time. Okay, good. That's good. We'll eliminate time as we know it. So we'll ask historically, in the ages of the universe, how does it affect it only from the last 50 years? Perfect. Okay, that's a good focus topic. Go ahead.
Right, because... The electric, let me tell you something. The electric
you tell
meeting.
Us something.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to create something. And you just watch the master create, and you just marvel. We're going to go where you can't go, okay?
Perfect.
Okay, the radio and movie environment came in, and television. It caused a huge discontinuity in culture. No one had experienced entertainment like that. And nowadays, the kids only know that. They don't know about Greek mythology unless they somehow heard about it by accident. But
they don't even know what vaudeville is.
That's right. So, that's what I'm citing within the entertainment world of Hollywood, which is the last 60 years, say, approximately. What was the first show or series or program that brought in the notion of parallel worlds? We know Gene Roddenberry maybe got at it in the late 60s, but was there something before that? Alfred Hitchcock, did he do something like that?
He did.
Yeah.
He did. There's a... No, Bob. You're just going to have to... No. Okay.
Well, Twin Peaks
fairy
did.
Tales. No. Fairy tales. When the TV body and the radio body started redoing fairy tales...
Yeah.
That's that application, but that's not fair because... Fairy tales have been around for a long, long, long time.
And that's children's. So let's talk about it as adult entertainment, like Twin Peaks. Like Twin Peaks, it ends. I watched it again, the ending. It goes into a portal. It has a whole thing about a very interesting interpretation. Not bad, pretty accurate.
Right.
About riff riding, you know, metaphorically in light of what we've been talking about. And so that's Twin Peaks. And that might have been the first to really present it that way.
No.
Okay, who did it before for adult entertainment with human beings and not fairies, you know?
Wait, what do you mean, not fairies?
Well, you know, there's not fairies in Twin Peaks, not fairy tales. Whatever you call Twin Peaks, human beings. FBI agent Dale Cooper. FBI agent Dale Cooper.
Yes, Bob, but...
Is there any show before that presented something... similar to the showing of the portal traveling in Twin Peaks?
Yes. Twilight Zone.
Okay. And that is in the 50s and 60s.
And,
Outer Limits, that was another one that probably did one.
Yes, but that was that whole Rod Sterling thing.
Yeah.
And what is it you call it? You said Outer Limits?
Yes.
And then there was another one. An interesting one was The Tales from the Dark Side.
Right.
That was before it. Then you also had the... radio show.
Yeah.
Before Orson Welles.
Okay.
That had to do with I want to call it Galactic Stamina or the Galactic Stampede or the Flash Gordon.
Yeah.
It was that thing because there was like a lineup of the radio shows. That most of those then became TV shows.
Right.
So you had dynamics that were extreme.
Okay. I find that I can under... The portal things seem to be an imaginative fictional device. Looking at the way Twin Peaks shows Cooper going to the woods, and then he goes into the ring of sycamore trees, like Chad's in... British Columbia, the tree motif, and then the curtain parts, and he goes into the world, and some people observing see that, his meat sack disappears, and then he spends the time running around with his double, and one double seems evil and is chasing him. Interesting dynamic. I think that may not be accurately what Portal is, But it was pretty interesting, the expression of the emotion of it, and the running around the same room. If you can look at the images of the room with the tile floor, I think that was...
And the bar, don't forget the bar, there's lots of stuff goes on there.
Yeah, so that I think that's one of the most accurate presentations that we could in culture present. I mean, it showed up, it's not fairy tales, it's not like, zap, beam me up, Scotty. It actually kind of showed it how one would imagine portal driving. So anyways, I think that, any comment on the Twin Peaks presentation?
No.
You think it was pretty good?
Well, not many embraced it, some did, but... Some did, but I mean, it wasn't this meme that changed the world.
No, but now we have Warehouse, Fringe, really implying it a lot. Not, I guess maybe just Fringe is doing it.
They're not implying it, they're stating it.
That's right. Well, Twin Peaks stated it.
Not directly, it was indirectly.
Yeah.
It was always the anomalies that couldn't get explained.
Right.
It was always the candor of the mystery or the mystery landscape that they were embracing but not understanding.
Right. And
where these newer ones state it, explain it, and re-explain it, and make it indivisible and do all kinds of different things.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. Ion had mentioned Twin Peaks, or someone did. I can see now from what you just said that, no, Fringe is really pushing the envelope here. They're stating, they're showing people.
And how to do it, and how it works, and how it is, and how you do it, and how you remember it. And then Olivia gets thrown out through the process, just like Charon.
Yeah.
And not as extreme, but can't remember it. And then all of a sudden, you got... who is the bionic woman that's Belle's assistant?
Nina.
Well, Nina starts seeing...
Wait, don't tell me. You've probably seen the new thing. I haven't seen it yet, so let's go.
Bob. You're so funny.
Yeah. I used that on my website. Somebody said, I said, you're so funny. I'm starting to use Ions.
You so funny. That's hysterical.
Yeah.
I never
thought of her as a bionic woman. That's right. She's got a metal arm. And maybe there's other stuff in her.
Well, but all she was saying was that you got to go see this fella and he'll help you. Remember.
Remember.
Remember, because she didn't have any knowledge. And somebody told her something. It was real important, but she didn't remember what it was. And something happened, but she wasn't sure what it was. And she had this parallel world experience, and then she got beat up in the return, and she couldn't remember anything about it. And then all of a sudden, she starts to remember a bit, and that becomes great, fun, and wonderful. But then she has to go through these tactile experiences to be able to gain her cognizant memory of the regard that she physically embraced and brought back the scars and war wounds regarding. You know, you start painting a picture and you say, well, now, if that ain't Carolyn, what is?
No, this summer... When I got familiar with Fringe,
hold on now. It's we got to ice, and I know that's very aggravating, and you hate it to mess up the recording, and I understand. But
no, I like it. I like it. I like the sound effect.
It's ice time.
I like the sound effect, so you have to drop that idea that's a bother.
No, but we don't want to get in the absolute middle of a red hot topic. And then when you go back and listen to it, all you can hear is the ice falling. So we just break the conversation a second. So if you had to redact it, you wouldn't miss anything. So that's all.
Right. I was saying that this summer I said that Walter was J.W. I think I said I was Peter and Carolyn was Olivia. I think I said Walter was a combination of me and J.W. But the point is, I said Olivia was Carolyn, and I almost created that, and then they manifested in the show when the new season came back. It literally. Now, am I creating that? Or am I having an influence on the script writers? In my world, I am, aren't I?
You are. Very good. You say, now, there you go. Yeah. Good. Bob, you've been listening to us too long. You're starting to answer yourself. It's great.
Yeah. In my world, I have. The question is, how much do I overlap into other universes and can claim that I have majority leverage on the writers? You know what I mean? Now, would that be...
Leverage. What the hell is leverage? Leverage.
Oh, leverage. Okay.
Leverage. You're the operator of the lever.
I only got high school, okay? You know, I go way back.
That's okay. We'll just... If you could just embrace the Queen's English, you'd be all right.
But, again, that digresses. Let's deal with the leverage. You know, can one figure out, calibrate with their calipers how much you actually did influence what was it? How much did James and Bob do really cause the crash? In their universe, they did. But how much would the general meme acknowledge it? And what is that general meme? And then we come back to that question of the interplay between the collective mind of reason and the personal labyrinth of the mind. You know? So how much did I have an influence on the thinking of the creators of the show?
Complete.
Right, in my universe.
In your universe. Very good. Very good. Very good. Very
right.
Good. Very
is there a way of making it beyond my universe? Which would be like giving significance to it beyond my own universe. You know how humans, they want significance in the public, even though they don't know where that is. But
not all of them do, but some do.
Yeah, and the public, where that is even getting more nebulous, where the public space is, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, so it's almost...
You don't even know where you are, let alone know where you're going.
Right. If I'm having influence on them and it's in my universe, it's no point, unless I want to be facetious or comically brag, there's no point in making the claim.
Correct.
Yeah, because you couldn't be able to...
Because all you're doing then is setting yourself up to the subjugation of another creator saying, boy, you're certainly full of yourself that you think that, because that just can't be, because in my universe, I don't even know what Warehouse 13 is. So therefore, you created Warehouse 13, but in my reality, I've never heard of it, I've never seen it, I don't know, I don't have any idea, I don't get sci-fi on my satellite TV, so I'm lost and undone, and if it wins an Emmy or a Tony or a Academy Award, great, but then it becomes one of these M. Night Shyamalan's movies that nobody went to go see.
Right. Do you like Shalimar's psychic movies? Movies about,
we do.
Yeah. They're something worth checking out for.
They're great fun.
Right. Are they accurate or good portrayals within human capabilities?
Oh, well, now that's maybe a little stretch.
Oh, okay.
But,
all right, so the...
But you can get good out of anything.
Who, anybody can?
Well, sure, Bob.
But I can. I can do that.
Anybody can. I mean, right. they can be, do, or have anything they want to be, do, or have.
Right. So it is, humans do want to know if they have a significance outside of themselves and their own reference point. That's part of the drama. That's what, humans are still looking for a public space. They thought literature was a public space. That, highly suspect now, Oprah sells fake authors. So they go to the movies. People look for attention by what they imagine.
Does Oprah sell fake authors?
Yeah, there's been a couple caught. Is that shocking for Ion? Is that?
No, describe that, what you mean.
There was a guy who stole, he got on there, he was promoted by Oprah. His name was James somebody a couple years ago. And it turned out his book was fraudulent. He got it from someone else or ripped it off or something. It became a big scandal back in Oprah's face.
And that how did they give the real author credit?
I don't know. It may not be exactly that, but there have been a couple of authors that have been promoted by Oprah and they were not what Oprah thought they were. I'll just say that.
Okay.
But a lot of people.
What were they if they weren't what Oprah thought they were?
They were something else. They stole their material or something, or they didn't write it. And what I remember is a couple of years ago is everybody sort of exaggerating it and say, well, the best that you. A lot of New York Times journalists were fired for making up stories. So it's just more and more people were saying, gee, people are getting paid making up stuff and lying. But we were talking about what?
Go into the movies.
Sliders. All right. The topic was, how do you tell?
Oh, let's go to the movies. We have a new movie for you.
No, just a second. The issue, ongoing issue, is how much can you see outside of yourself? And Ion seems to favor, well, it doesn't make any difference. You create your own space. But people do listen to each other, and they have to acknowledge some shared space that they resonate on.
Well, they co-create, so yes.
Co-create. So I'm co-creating with the writers of Fringe.
Absolutely.
And JW is too?
Certainly.
And Carolyn?
He enjoys it immensely.
Right. Now, what's the name of the psychic that Abrams used in Boston? Tim Kittredge?
Kring.
Okay, let's spell exactly. It's Tim, right? T-I-M?
Tim Kring. K-R-I-N-G.
Oh, okay. Tim Kring. Not Kittredge. What was Ironhead Kittredge or Kettering or something?
Kittredge is different, but you said which one for Fringe.
Yeah, the one that, no, okay. J.J. Abrams seems to go to psychics. He has that theme and all this thing. And there was someone in Boston, Ion said he had been seeing.
Yes, but that was before.
Before Fringe. Tim Kittredge was for The Lost Period. The show.
Yes, that's right. Very good. You remembered.
Yeah, so let's spell, and I'm going to write this in. Tim Kring now, and it was Tim Kittredge. How would you spell that name?
Timothy.
Right.
Kittredge. K-I-T-T-R-I-D-G-E.
Oh, okay. Timothy Kittredge. K-I-T-T-R-I-D-G. And then the newer one is Tim Kring.
Yes.
Has Abrams been going to psychics all his life?
Most of his life, yeah.
Was it in his parents' life? Well, how did he, that's like me, how did he find out about them? What prompted him to look into that?
He gave it his undivided attention, and then it showed up in his reality. And but don't tell Oprah, it might be a false premise.
That's right. He found...
Like that, didn't you?
Yeah. So did he learn about parallel traveling from either one of these, well, I guess Kittredge before... Either one of these.
Well, he would say he developed it and created it. See, from his place of creation, but then all of a sudden it became something that was embraceable.
Yeah.
So when it came.
Okay. Did Kittredge or Kring? And I imagine it had to be Kittredge because it was a while ago, and that was the first psychic. Did he learn about portal traveling like we're learning from Ion when he interacted with Kittredge?
No.
He did not get it from any medium.
The dynamic, no.
We are getting the dynamic from Ion, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and he didn't get that, but he took what he got from Kittredge and developed it into this his own version of...
Yes, that's exactly correct.
Right.
Very good.
So... Why is he going to Tim Kring now and not Tim Kittredge?
The other one, Kittredge, died.
And Kittredge was in Boston?
Yes.
Where is Kring?
New York.
Okay. And Ion thinks these are pretty good psychics?
Well, it's all based on how they embrace with the Creator.
Right.
If you're pushing against everything, then no. If you're all twisted up in your own self of questioning your own knowing place of how you're aligned with the physical, non-physical through your mind, and you question continually your spiritual gifts that have continually made themselves manifest, then
describing the medium, not J.J. Abrams.
Right. Well, that's what you asked about.
No,
You said, were they good medium?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
We have a new movie for you. It's not out yet. It's not going to be out. Matter of fact, I don't even know that it's finished yet.
Yeah.
But Google the movie 2012.
Oh, I think that's out. I've heard people talk about it. Maybe it's not out, but yes, I've heard about it. And you think that's going to be interesting. I think someone told me it shows a lot of negative stuff.
Absolutely.
And that's
worst of the worst of the worst.
Right, and that's half the story for those that are going to have that 2012.
Oh, that's going to be the biggest part of the story because, Bob, that's the meme that everybody's embraced.
Right, that the world, like they say, are we going to survive 2012? Well, Bob's thinking, well, it's not even an issue here in Dobbstown,
but you're right.
Yeah, it's not even an issue. But, okay, so I got to realize that they're not going to get my version of 2012.
But they're going to get contrast, so that's good enough.
Right. And why... So J.J. Abrams, does he... is there a level where he's picking up on my thinking because we're in the same space or something? Can that happen?
Sure.
Or maybe is it his writers who are doing Fringe more than him?
It's his writers.
All right. So the writers are tuned in to me. It's like we're thinking about... Right, they're not tuned into me. But...
Well, yeah, they don't care.
They're just getting thoughts.
They're just getting paid.
Well, how did they get Livia being like Carolyn? How did that happen?
Carolyn lined up with it.
Okay.
Before Fringe, Carolyn didn't have a clue there was a parallel anything.
That's right. She learned the same time Fringe happened.
Did they catch up to her? Did she catch up to them? Well, it's co-creating at its best.
I'd say she caught up with them because they would have made the movies before March 18th when Ion started.
Oh, well, then you'll have to check your time and see how it all worked out.
Ah, okay, we don't have to go by that. Okay.
Well, you can, but it's a false premise, so good luck with that.
Okay, so what is the movie Sliders about, or TV series Sliders?
Okay, that was about these whippersnappers that had the ability and capacity to jump. They did it as time jumps.
Mm.
And that's how they portrayed it. And they made a movie, they didn't, but then a movie came later called Jumper.
Right.
Which was kind of like that as well. But the sliders, they could go in and out of their capacities, and they had this retracted thing where they had this little cage, and they had to do these things, and then they would go into other worlds. And it was like this little plexiglass little thing, and they would jump back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. This process where they'd go through and then they'd go and try to change the past and adjust the future and figure out who's on first.
Right, and that was a TV show.
Right.
I
think they also made a movie too, but TV show may have had a little more splash. It was a little easier to divide it up. When you start these large things, large dynamic shifts, like Star Trek, you could do it week by week by week by week, and you had a better shot than doing a movie where you did this whole big thing, like The Butterfly Effect and some of these other movies that really embrace this time travel, dimension travel. People get lost in it, and they can't do it. You know, they can't get there.
In the movie experience.
Right.
But if you have it repeated every week, it becomes acceptable.
And you can embrace it and then embrace it and then go a little further and then embrace it. And then sometimes that makes it easier, you see.
Okay, so sliders, you know, I came up with this idea of sliding between dimensions. I could blame that on the embed of sliders. you know, Ion doesn't like that word, sliding. For
well, no, that's what you, that's what they call burgers in Vermont.
Right, right. But the sliding, no, I said slipping, sorry. I was thinking it was slipping that Ion objected to, not sliding. Okay.
Slipping into these other worlds.
Yeah. Okay.
Like a mistake.
Yes.
That's like you slipped off the wagon, so now you're drunk again or something.
So when we look at...
Oh, it was a slip of the tongue, something I didn't have control over that just sort of got out.
Right. When I look at Plato's writings, knowing about parallel traveling, parallel world, might be a useful... It might make you understand Plato better. If you,
absolutely.
Yeah. He was a traveler himself.
Indeed.
And he was from the future. Was he some?
As you know it.
A lot of these famous, powerful people were people from, were FTs, future mm-hmm. terrestrials. And they came and they and they got exiled and they were, you know, they kept to themselves, and that's understandable because they were slipping into other worlds.
And the best ones didn't care because they were slipping.
Oh, sorry, yes.
Slipping and sliding, and they'd slip up, and then they'd slide into another realm, and then they'd get screwed into that realm, and then they'd be in a problem, and so they'd slide and slip out into another thing, and then they'd slip a stitch, and then they'd slide into something, you know, and after a little while, it's kind of like, well, wait a second.
Okay, when Plato says that our objects in this world are copies of more ideal or perfected images, that was his version of there's two of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he was thinking of the other world where you could do things, process them easier or rehearse them. That's an ideal world. He was actually talking about that when he talked about the archetype.
So was Shakespeare trying to establish his fatalism.
Was Shakespeare a riff writer?
We discussed that a long time ago, yes.
I think he was. So was Mozart.
Absolutely.
It seems that the closer you get to genius, you will tap into this.
Well, because the closer you get to genius, the less time you have to push against the conceptual idea of it.
Yeah. Genius.
Think about it.
Yeah, relaxing and allowing is one of the ways to become a genius.
And it's also the easiest way to become certifiable card-carrying crazy.
Yeah, you got to be. You have to interact with the public meme, which we don't know where it came from, but there is the mind of reason. A culture establishes a mind of reason, a bunch of memes, and the public...
This one's right, and this one's wrong, this one's stupid, and this one's a genius.
Yeah.
And they could all be doing the identically, precisely same things.
Right, so what is it? See, there, we try to create our own universe, but we try to resonate and validate and vilify ourselves in relation to a perceived general cognition. That's what's an interesting phenomenon.
Well, and as you're vilifying things, then you come into a place, how does that go? That means who's got the white hat and who's got the black hat.
Right. And it's
interesting.
And what that means is, how, what do you align, as to the degree you acknowledge other humans, which humans do you exchange your energies with?
The ones you resonate with.
Right. And they seem to have to think that they're resonating with something that is better or something
else.
Well,
you hope it's better, but it doesn't have to be better.
No, better than the other person that you're not resonating. There's always that judging, but that's the mixing
well,
it up. That's contrast, isn't it? That's the contrast.
Well, it is, but see, the best contrast also becomes, okay, you're in high school. You're the meanest teacher that you had, the one you couldn't stand the sight of, that you hated empirically,
yeah,
and everything about him. Then you get out of high school and give a little span of time, and those drudgery ones seem to change miraculously and become the one that made the biggest difference, significant contribution to your life.
Yeah.
This is your life with Kitty Carlisle.
Yes.
You know, and,
yeah,
and that process, I don't know where that came from, but you get...
I know about Kitty Carlisle. You might have got it from me.
Mm-hmm. And then you start coming back to say, wait a second, this one that I couldn't stand is the one I revere the best, because this one helped me develop my place of being and knowing this more perfectly than any other experience that I've had.
Right, so the public meme is the creation.
It's passively aggressive.
Yes, and it's there to provide the contrast. If humans come in here to mix it up and they need contrast to mix it up with and co-create, then there's...
Need.
Yeah,
need.
They want the something to contrast against. That is the thing that creates the public space. It's the shared commonality of every soul looking for a contrast. So then everybody agrees on a contrasting white hat, black hat in their culture, so they know what to resist and react against. That's where we've just cracked it. The fact we come here to have contrast, what contrast creates is the shared public space that you're bouncing off of, that you're seeking the approval of or seeking to overthrow. You see what I'm saying?
Or the reason of its demise.
The reason of demise of what? The contrast?
Whatever the meme is.
Yeah, the underlying dynamic is the wanting of contrast. That creates public space. For me, I've figured it out.
You have figured it out.
Yeah.
Now you're ready for number 29.
No, I'm still doing 27.
Oh, I know, but then now that you've got it, you're ready for 29.
All right, very good. All right, I think, let me just see if there's any other little side issues to come up. That's a major thing. Is there anybody noticing yet that there's a voice coming out of her speakerphone as they walk by in the evening? Has anybody picked up and wondered who we're talking to here in the compound?
Have we not asked them?
Yes, I've asked that many times.
150,000 times.
They don't get it. They're not picking up.
Bob, if you're going to draw it, though, you know, they'll be camping in your yard and, you know, putting up the signs and protesting, and, you know, have a picket line.
So we're being protected here. It's good that nobody's noticing it.
Well, it's whatever you want. You want the news crew in there listening to you? Okay. You want the government and their parabolic hearing devices pointing and beaming into your window?
And they do have those, right?
Well, yeah, what do you think?
Well, how well developed are they?
Very well developed.
Very well developed. They can listen to anything.
With not just them, you can go to the Radio Shack and buy those. And
has anybody ever taped Carolyn and I in through the years? Using these parabolic things.
Yes.
All right. And why did they do it? Were they more interested in Carolyn as the medical renegade, or?
Well, when they were pressing the envelope about questioning of whether she was inappropriately practicing medicine
in Toronto.
Yes.
They listened into our private life. And what did they conclude from that? That we were terrorists and they had to take her license away.
Or whatever, yeah. They were going to do that anyway. They were just looking for a reason.
Did they find anything?
Not outside their own compounds, except renegade? No. When you take a radical position or view, just the radicalness of it was all.
But that's what they were concerned about.
Yeah.
And they were wondering if she would get a bigger audience, and did they get some incriminating tape so they could use it, eventually pull out, look what she said, what she, her tape recordings of her. Were they looking for that kind of thing?
Yeah, but it didn't serve them well.
Yeah, because there's not that much said.
Well, of course.
Yeah. So they sat outside in a car on 122 Ellsworth and could beam it that way? just be parking nearby on the sidewalk and beaming at the house? Is that how they do it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the people that were employed to do that, were they within the college's own police, secret police, or did they hire individuals who didn't even know why it was being taped?
Probably the latter.
Yeah. And this would be the people on the committee of the Ontario College of Assistant Surgeons, the whatever that cabal clique is, be those. Now, what happened to those people? And that's 20 years ago, almost. And what Carolyn does is now common, pretty accepted. In the pot. Where are they? What happened to them? They still
they
think
just
they're
fell back into the woodwork and call it a day.
And they, I mean, the people that were there was the tapers, but the ones that that you had.
Way.
Are they? Did they figure out medicine? Did they get surprised?
Well, yeah, would that they could.
Yeah, did they get surprised that what Carolyn talked about 20 years ago is now quite common? Or they're not even aware of that?
Not so much.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you're giving too much credibility to it.
They live in their own world, and their world, their world's great. They won.
That's good.
They think Carolyn's gone.
Yep, how's your time going?
I think it's time to end.
It's
getting near 4 o'clock for JW, so we should.
Oh, okay, good, because we wondered, because he was like falling away, and we're like, well, wait, we're just getting started good, so what's going on?
No, very good. I've got a major insight about what the public mind is. It's contrast. That's where the public mind comes from. Everybody contributes the notion, I'm here for contrast, so contrast, the notion of the shared goal of looking for contrast, the contrast becomes the public culture's blamable dialectic.
Very good.
All right. Very good. Thank you, Ion.
How very wonderful, and we enjoy playing more than you know, and we will play when you're ready to hoe at it again.
Great.
We are complete.